This episode of Yes But Why Podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
We have been blessed this last year. My main improv project is called Binge Watch, and it's Dan Wilson and myself, and we have been going to about a fest a month, although there have been a couple of months where we've gone to two in a month.
Wow.
So that's pretty great. We're feeling very blessed, and we just came back from the Denver Improv Festival, where we were invited to perform and to teach. We brought our festival workshop, Improv Triage. We call it a treatment lab for your improv challenges. And it's the third time we presented this workshop. And it's just giving us this amazing opportunity to go in and literally triage improvisers on what they want to work on and then just get really deep, intense lab with them. It's our third time teaching this at a festival, and I think it's the one I want to keep presenting. People are coming out of it saying, you gave me a tool that I've been looking for years, or your customized attention and exercises have blown my mind, or I just feel like I have a fairy godmother there giving me side coaching, helping me become the best that I can be. And I know the best that I can be sounds overblown, but it's extraordinary to get to be part of people's lives and watch them crack open a little bit and find these tools that they feel is helping them bring their best game.
I generally teach level one, so I am often getting people fresh on their journey, and letting them, and I I like being the first troll they have to solve the riddles of before they get over the bridge.
To cross the bridge.
Yeah, that's how I do it. But,
I so feel you. I teach level one as well at Leela in San Francisco,
yeah.
And there's something magical about being a person's first improv teacher.
Yeah, it really is. How do you make that connection super quickly with the workshop people when you do festival workshops?
Well, we literally talk to each one of them, and we've gotten to where we can be pretty succinct and concise about it and dig really deep on what is troubling them or what they perceive themselves as being troubled by. And sometimes it is solely a perception, but we literally take time to talk to each person, ask them what we're working on, get a feel of the room. And then from that, we either curate or create exercises that are going to serve the people in the room that day, because we have no idea who we're getting until we walk in that room with them.
Wow. How do you feel about teaching with your duo partner? Like, I've co-taught with a couple people, but there's only been, I don't know, one or two that I've really felt like, you know, we had a vibe going and we were, you know, passing back and forth the baton of wisdom. How do you guys do it? Have you been working together?
Nailed it. Yeah, we love working together. Dan and I have worked together in other projects since 2005. As Binge Watch, we've been working together 2 years, 2.5 years actually, and we share a brain sometimes, and yet we have enough difference in our approach that we're filling in where the other one leaves off, and there's so much mutual respect, and we do, as you said, we just trade back and forth, and I'll say something, and he'll say, oh, yes, and let me add to that, or I will do the same. Yeah, and so it's been incredibly copacetic.
Wow. I mean, like, I am an excessive control freak. So before I go into Before I go into a workshop, I have everything like outlined, written down, exactly what I'm going to do if this works or doesn't work. Like I have like side ideas and stuff. Like it's all just plotted out. I can't imagine the on the fly situation. Do you guys have 5 or 10 exercises that you keep in your back pocket that just cures whatever ails your workshop attendees?
Well, you know, if it were that simple, I think I could franchise it and have a lot of folks do it. But the way we work is we tend to have, and this is not an exaggeration, we tend to have about 30 to 40 exercises that are top of mind. And then sometimes we'll take parts of them or sometimes we'll create something brand new. It just really is about what the person who walks in the room needs. And what's been very interesting is that people that come in sort of in clumps of like, oh, there's like 18 people and the majority of these people, what they're really working on is getting out of their head, or they're working on having a broader emotional range, or just taking more space, especially if they're in a new troop or they're a newer player and they're sort of being deferential to other players. So we're finding there's sort of an interesting clumping of need within these groups. But even within that, then as each person is working, we're giving them coaching that is specific to them in the moment. Because for me, side coaching, I love side coaching. I'm not a director or teacher that's necessarily going to sit down and write out notes and then give them to you at the end. Because with improv being such an of the moment thing and a visceral thing, I like to give people a note in that moment so they can make that adjustment and see where that takes them in the moment.
Whoa, people do that? People write notes and then send it to you after class?
Yeah, some do. Whoa. And I will, if I don't have the opportunity, like I was traveling to the Denver Fest, so a group that I coach that's one of Leela's performing improv ensembles, the professionals, I have the privilege of coaching that group. They do a mockumentary style, and I did not have an opportunity to get them their notes because we weren't going to have a rehearsal on Halloween. So I typed up their notes and I sent them to them. But it's not my preferred way. I prefer to give people notes in the moment, and then for shows, I prefer to go back, watch the game tape again, and then give them the note in the rehearsal and talk about it after they've had a chance to watch it as well.
Interesting. I like the theory of the game tape. I think that's really great. I think it's important to be able to watch like what you're doing, because whenever I teach improv, I'll tell them like, you know, like, cause there's like a group and there's two people doing a scene. And then when we finish that scene, I give them some notes, but then I often like, will go to the room. Like, what was another way we could do this thing? Like clearly we wanted to make it worse for John. What could we do to make it worse for John? And like get them to throw ideas out. Right.
Yes.
But like sometimes that then they feel like they are either, they feel like they can give a note and I'm like, no, that's not what this is about.
I'm really careful to say, what did you love?
Yeah.
Well, or if it's in a slightly more advanced situation with maybe like a cast of folks, I tend not to let anybody give each other notes, but I will ask them, so what would you do? And it sounds like you do something similar. Like, what might you try? And then I'm like, let's go to our panel of experts. What might you try? And get several ideas. And then the actor's like, you know, I want to try that. I'm going to try Joe's idea, or I'm going to try Sally's idea. Yeah. And that way they can be collaborative without giving each other notes.
Oh, well, you know, also I was going to say that sometimes when I, you know, the people inside the scene will be like, oh my God, all you guys had like all so many great ideas. I couldn't think of anything. And I'm like, you need to forgive yourself, because being inside the scene is like walking uphill while somebody screams in your ears and you have to figure out how to communicate with your scene partner and come up with funny ideas. The rest of us are quietly watching from the outside with all of this, like, you know, like, well, it doesn't affect me emotionally. And so that's why we can come up with 47,000 ideas, because we're here in this safe place. You are doing the hard work. It is not a surprise at all that you can only hear and come up with 2% of what could possibly be out there. You have to forgive yourself of that. Like,
that is such beautiful advice. I was taking a workshop at the Alaska State Improv Festival with Jonathan Pitts, and he was leading us through the Marty, the Martin DeMont. And before we started, he said, I want to just be very clear that those of you sitting out there watching, you'll see everything and you'll be like, oh, it's this is so simple. I see exactly what's going on. But when you're up here, it's going to be very different. So please just bear that in mind. And I thought that was such a great framing of the exercise for those of us watching before we got started. And then for when we were on that stage doing the exercise, such a different situation.
Yeah.
So to give them the permission to forgive themselves is, oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Well, I mean, it was just so many times when people were like, why can you guys come up with all sorts of ideas and we can't? It's like, well, because you're fighting against the wind. Like, I can't, you know, I'm sitting here in a covered porch going like, it's warm and toasty in here. Like, you know, you're in the blizzard outside. All you can think of is like, moving forward. Ah! Like,
one step at a time.
Right? Like, I'm inside with the Coco going like, you know what? If he took the left road, it would be faster. Like, you know, he doesn't know what road he's on at all, you know?
He's snowblind. He's in the middle of
it. Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy situation, improv. So I'm like, okay, first of all, I'm gonna ask you guys to do a crazy magic trick, and then I'm going to try to make you do it for 8 weeks. How do you feel about that? That's what's happening right now.
Yay! Like,
you didn't think you came to a magic class, but you did. Oh man,
it is like magic, isn't it?
I mean, it really is
like Convergence. I just watching my students' faces. We always play Convergence at the top of the class in our level 3 class at Leela, and when people converge on the same word, the look on their faces is like, oh, I just turned straw into gold. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and it's just one word.
And it's just one word.
Yeah, there's so many more words. Oh man, so tell me what got you into improv. How did you find it? Was it right away, or, you know, after a laborious journey through community theater? How did it get there?
Well, I've definitely done some community theater and some regional stuff and produced some of the stuff. I came at improv in two paths. I first started doing improv in the late 80s doing short form at the Holy City Zoo, which was a comedy club here in San Francisco. And we were given a shot on a Wednesday night by Will Durst and his awesome wife, Debbie Durst. They had bought the club and to save it from becoming something else and to keep that tradition going. So while performing there and hanging out there, I got to see people like Robin Williams and Greg Proops and Bobby Slayton and all manner of comics coming through there, cutting their teeth. So that was my first entree, and that was strictly short form. And we were a group called the Pros from Dover. And if you know that reference, well, I'll give you a gold star, but it comes from the movie MASH. So we did Wednesday nights.
MASH?
For a year at the Holy City Zoo. Yeah, the quote comes from the movie MASH.
Oh, the movie.
Movie. And Hawkeye and, oh goodness, the other guy, they're called into a hospital to operate on a kid who's a general's son. And they say, oops, we got this. We're the Pros from Dover. We'll crack that kid's chest. We'll be back on the golf course in an hour. And so it's a silly reference, but that's who we were. And we played every Wednesday for like a year, maybe longer. And I remember at one point it rained in San Francisco for like 3 months, and it always seemed to be raining on Wednesdays. We were like, oh, it must be Wednesday. It's raining outside. But I did short form for years on that little awesome stage. And then years later, I discovered long form. And it all started with a company called Combined Art Form Entertainment, produced by the illustrious Matthew Quinn. And we started a troupe called Tilted Frame using multimedia and improv together, which I loved because I've always had a love for multimedia. I had worked with a local theater called George Coates Performance Works, who used projections and film and multimedia and 3D projections and film projections and hydraulic sets that raised and lowered to accommodate the perspective, the forced perspective projected onto the screen.
Wow.
And that was extraordinary. So to get to put multimedia and improv together was pretty neat. And I worked with them for a while, and flash forward a few more years, a former member of that group, Tilted Frame, said, hey, you should come work with Leela. I think that would be a really good fit for you. So I started out playing with their Armando company, and eventually was asked to do drop-in because it's the gateway drug. So I taught drop-in for a while, and then was asked to teach level one and asked to direct. And then I took on level three. But in the interim of that, I was looking around saying, I want an indie project. What do I want to do? And I realized I wanted to do a duo. And I had been doing Christy Young, who introduced me to Leela, and I working with Dan Wilson and some other beautiful human beings, Dan Ronco, Dave Austin Bruin, Brian Shermer, Sharon Rylander. We all were doing a thing called Radio Star, which was an improvised radio podcast.
Oh.
And yeah, so when I went looking around for a duo partner, I remembered the amazing character work that Dan Wilson would do. And I'm very character-based and very narrative in my improv. And so I hit him up and said, hey, Dan, I want to do a duo. What do you think? And we got together and we're like, well, let's see how long we can go. And we started playing and we checked the clock and it was over an hour. And we're like, okay, I guess we can do a 30-minute set.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we both like genre. So we knew we wanted to do something genre-based. And we would ask the audience, what do you love watching? And one show, I think it was our second show, people were yelling out so many ideas, we chose to take two. And we took two shows and mashed those together with a little bit of a third. And that is where our form actually started. And we had decided to be binge watch anyway. That was the name we gave ourselves. So now that's our form. We take two very disparate shows that they love binge watching and they tell us why they love it. We mash those shows together and we make a brand new show. So we've had
I love examples. It.
We've had like, oh, Sesame Street meets The Good Place, or oh! Chernobyl meets 90 Day Fiance.
Whoa, that one must have been crazy.
So crazy.
Oh
so
my
crazy.
God. I also like just want to hear what people are watching. Like, that's the other part. Right? Just to be like, what? This is the shows? Because the shows that I watch are never what people are watching. Like, I'll be like, guys, so did you see this? And they're like, what is that? Watching? Like, you know, I don't know. I always end up like finding random stuff. Yeah, right? Who knows? Oh, that must be fun, too. They're like, everyone's yelling something, and you're like, have you heard of it? Like, no, I totally haven't. Yeah, let's do it.
Right? Exactly.
And then it's like, you're constantly just referencing things. Like, they say ER, but you've never seen ER, but you're like, I get it. I understand. You're like, I'm a doctor here in this AR. Like,
and you know what makes it so interesting is that we could get the same show three times and have actually, especially with Game of Thrones, but it comes down to what they love about the show. And that's where we take our lead from. It's what they enjoy.
Right. Because you like make them tell a story about why they like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also for those who are in the audience that maybe don't know that show at all.
Totally.
So that gives us a little more group mind, more shared experience.
So even if somebody in the audience like hasn't seen Game of Thrones, if they're like, I like strong women and dragons, and you're like, cool, I get it.
Like, I got you.
And then you're like,
yeah,
those are the things that we're going to bring up because she mentioned that's what her favorite things were. Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's great. That's so fun.
Thank you. We love it.
One of the other things I'm always saying to my my level one class is it's real hard to make improv fun for the audience. So don't feel bad because when you do your first class, because the thing about improv is it's super fun for the people doing it, but then you have to find a way to make it fun for the audience. So that's why there's 47 different thousand forms and stuff.
Yes.
But when we get to your level one improv recital, you're not going to have that many forms in your pocket to be using. So just be cool with whatever weird stuff is going to happen, because the people who come to level one recitals are kind, sweet souls. So exactly. Don't worry. You have the kindest audience you could have. But the other thing is, like, I love your premise, because it, like, really gets everybody in it. And then, like, everyone's together. And then even if they haven't seen the show, they're like, but that girl seemed nice and she liked it. So now they're, like, connected. That's fine.
You're exactly right. There are moments. Some of my favorite moments are, like, somebody says a show and somebody else goes, yeah. And then they end up in this brief conversation, like, remember when? Oh, yeah. And then he showed up and we thought he was dead. Yeah. And it's like they had this shared history, even though they were in separate cities.
Yeah.
But they have this moment that they feel connected to each other. And I love that.
Oh, fun. Yeah, they're like, are you team Barney or what? Oh, absolutely not. I'm team Ted, like whatever it is.
Exactly. it's like you were there.
That's so fun. And do you have a regular, are you performing it at Lila with that crowd, or you have like another space that you're doing your regular binge watch shows? Or perhaps
well,
there's a regular.
I have to give so much love and thanks to Lila, because while we are an indie duo, they have been such a beautiful home for us.
Cool.
So we perform predominantly at Lila. We also perform at Moment for their two-play improv extravaganza. And we have played at All Out Comedy in Oakland, which is another Bay Area theater. Thank you, Colleen. And now we're getting invited to perform in other theaters. We were invited to come down to the PAC and perform with another group that I have the privilege of coaching called Peach Pit. So Sean Landry and Hans Summers down at the PAC invited us to come down. And it was great because it was on the same weekend that we were going to be at the San Diego Improv Fest. So we had a really just a fun packed weekend there. And then our friends, in the duo Roland and Riches, we ran into them in New Orleans. And after we all got back into California, they shot us a message and said, hey, we have a new home at Acme in North Hollywood, and we'd love to have you come down next year. So we're going to be guesting there. And we're just looking for more cities to perform in, even outside of the festival circuit.
It sounds tonight, like you're doing a lot of, you know, like you have a great relationship with the other theaters in your community. That's really wonderful.
We feel really lucky to have that. And we're so grateful that, you know, people are enjoying the work we're doing and inviting us to come and play. And of course, we have so much gratitude to Jill Eichmann and her husband, Christopher Eichmann, for providing a home for us wayward improvisers. So we're feeling really lucky.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it's a great community over there, and it's really great that everybody that you can perform at different spots. Like I've had varying experiences and also heard from different improvisers across the country, you know, sometimes towns aren't so friendly. Like there's three theaters and they are in competition as opposed to working together. I've certainly worked with an artistic director who thought everybody was his enemy. So I was like, but what's going on? So, so it's cool that you guys have like a good situation going on and that you can be performing your special kind of show all sorts of different spots. And it's not like, no, that's our show. We own it. That kind of stuff.
We feel really fortunate for that. And we would chafe under the bridle of such a situation. So we're very grateful. Absolutely. We did represent. So we had the opportunity to be part of this interesting online competition. And it was put on by Amy Gerlach and, oh, forgive me, I'm not remembering the other gentleman's name, but it was her producing partner. And she created a game called Humans Being Card Game to teach people how to play improv. She made it so she could play improv games with her mom. And to promote this, she did a competition where duos, and it was only duos, would use the game and record little scenes and put them up, and then people would vote on them. And so we were so thankful for all of the love and support that Lila gave us, that even though we're an indie team, we said that we were an indie team representing Lila. And we went all the way to the final. It was down to the final two. It was done like a March Madness thing. And what was so fun is the last two groups standing were number 10 seeds. So we came from way behind and we went all the way. It was a total Cinderella story. And in the end, we came in second, but we had such an amazing time. The group that won was called the Gay Agenda, and they were adorable and very funny and clearly mobilized community and did a great job getting the vote out. But we chose to represent Leela because we felt that they had given us so much support. And we started on their stage. Fun. Yeah.
That's so cool. What a fun, like, game. That's so,
it's so great.
Cool. I bet you that's folks, a great, like, you know, level one game, too.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And you can just tell that Amy put so much love into developing this game. So it's out there. If you're looking for a little birthday gift for somebody, think about giving them that.
Yeah. What's it called again?
It's called Humans Being Card Game.
Humans Being Card Game. All right.
And I promise you, we don't get a kickback for promoting it. We just had a really great time competing in the thing and doing little short videos, which now has made us decide we want to do more more video and more sketch work.
Once you like get over the hump of like getting one done, it's great to put that kind of stuff out there. It can be really hard to like be like, but we should, but let's keep talking about it. But as soon as you get it done the first time, it's like, we could do 1,000 of these.
Well, we have this amazing competition that happens here in San Francisco at a theater called Piano Fight. And the guys that run Piano Fight started this competition that's called Short Lived, and it has grown into the nation's largest audience-judged theater competition. And Dan was like, I'm going to write a sketch specifically for Short Lived. And so he did, and we participated in Short Lived. I had done it in the past, but it was the first time that Ben Dwetch threw our hat in the ring. And we had a blast. He wrote this hilarious two-hander, and we just had the best time with it. And it's just so much fun to see all these different sketches come together. They play for a weekend, the audience votes, and then the finals, we did not win, but we had a blast. The finals went to a big, beautiful theater here in San Francisco. And it was so fun to see the sketch comedy community come out and be in their finery in this fabulous, you know, equity theater, watching sketch on stage. It was kind of special.
That's so fun. Man, I want to be in a big opera house doing sketch comedy.
Right?
That sounds so fun.
Well, come and do Short Lived.
Right? I wrote it down, believe me. I was like, you can submit sketches to what? Yeah. So tell me.
And the winner gets $5,000. Just saying.
Oh, wow. So I'm writing that down.
San Francisco's a magical place.
Yeah, it is. It sounds like it's a great community with lots of different opportunities to do performance, and that's really wonderful. I mean, it's always nice when I talk to people who are in a community that's got a lot for them to do. There's certainly a lot of people that I talk to where they're, you know, bare bones in it, and it's like, it's me and my three friends, and we're just doing it in this, you know, basement of a bar, and I'm like, yes, you are. Keep doing it, brother.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, so for you, like, is your main focus, you do the performing, and it sounds like you and Dan are really like involved in, you know, doing projects together. Do you have other projects going on, or is your main focus teaching?
I do have other projects going on, and yes to all of the above.
Tell me about it all.
I'll do my best. So I am so lucky to be I'm part of the leadership team with Leela. So I'm faculty, I direct, and I'm the director of community and one of the senior producers. So that keeps me busy. I also, I do communication work, helping people communicate with more empathy or with more confidence. And so I coach within companies, and I coach one-on-one with people, and that is hugely gratifying. And I also teach now at festivals. This is the year of doing that, and that's amazing. And I coach people who want to act. And then I coach independently. I coach various improv groups. I'm currently coaching, I mentioned Peach Pit, and I'm also directing another duo called Foolhardy. And there are two guys who met in a troupe also at Leela and decided to become an indie duo. And we're looking for a coach. And I was lucky enough to be asked. So we're collaborating and they're getting ready to do their first self-produced show a little later this month.
That sounds so interesting. Tell me more about the communication workshops. Are you a therapist or are you using improv and theater techniques in your workshop or both?
So I am not a therapist.
Okay.
Our dear Jill Eichmann, who is the artistic director of Leela, she is a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I am not a therapist. I'm using exactly what you said. I'm using improv and theater techniques to help people sometimes to role play. Sometimes it's just to employ one of those techniques to their presentation. Whatever it is they, you know, whatever they're working on, I tend to meet them where they are. And I learned, even before I created this workshop, Improv Triage, I learned that I like to work with people that way. I like to meet them where they are and bring my skill set to help them in the moment. And I guess the fact that it's improv in and of itself is part of the appeal for me.
Yeah, plus, I mean, you can frame improv to anything, really, because it really just serves to open you up and connect you to people. So it has so many benefits that I feel like you could certainly use it. Plus, I mean, I'm sure you may have also taken a couple of, you know, drama classes with some breathing exercises or those fun acting exercises that I never quite got, where there's a lot of repetition and staring or making noises. And I make people do that all the time. I don't get it. Like, I'm always like, yeah, this will get them out of their shell. Like, man, they're all a little stiff. Okay, guys, we're all going to go, huh, huh, huh. And then they're looking at me like I'm crazy, and I'm like, this is serious. Come on, guys.
I love it.
And then when they finish, I like, giggle, and I was like, that was funny. They're like, oh, what?
Now I want to take your class.
Oh man. Well, you know, it's funny. It's almost like what you're talking about with the improv triage. Sometimes it does change up based on the group. I mean, the group I'm teaching right now is like super together. Like, even one of the students was like, "Is it usual for the class to get along like we do?" And I was like, "No, not really." So, be happy that that's happening. Like, I've definitely had classes where they're like, "Can I never do a scene with that guy?" And I'm like, "No, that's not a thing. You can ask me, but good luck. Let's talk about it. Let's deal with why you don't want to be in a scene with them." But, you know, like, some people don't get along, but this particular group gets along. And some people are shy, and this group is not shy. So, you know.
Oh, that's an awesome combo.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It was like from the first minute, they were all like, "Hey, you guys want to be best friends?" And then they were. And it was like, oh.
Oh, that's magic.
Yeah,
and that doesn't happen all the time.
No, it doesn't.
We're really lucky. We have a great community at Leela, and you know, they bond to greater or lesser degrees, but it seems like, I don't know, like maybe a couple of times a quarter, there'll be a group that comes through and they are just so connected. They end up staying together and be friends forever. And we've even had over the last year, we've had a couple of groups that just coalesced so much in their level four class that they ended up being a troupe together. And that's so beautiful to see. there's a group that came out of well, Peach Pit. I mean, they met in, I think, level three. I could be misspeaking, but they met in level three, and their instructor was the amazing Sarah Schumacher, and they just formed a little group of six. They're now, Sarah's now in Chicago doing beautiful things, and there was another Stacy, and she's moved, I believe, to Colorado. So they're now four, but they are. Totally, they were bonded simply because they just met and fell in love. And I think that affinity makes for such a special connection on stage.
We're talking right now about like an anomaly of like people getting along. What do you teach a lot? What do you do when the group doesn't get along. Like, we've even acknowledged that the idea that people are getting along all the time is like not, that doesn't always happen. So, you know, we've both had to deal with it, but what's your method for when the group kind of isn't vibing? Like, how do you try to get people connected when they're not, they're kind of, you know, bumping heads or they're not letting their guard down?
One of the exercises I really love, for two reasons, it gives people some autonomy in that they're getting to make contributions to building a world by themselves. So I love to do the monoscene where they each add a thing to the room and then they do a series of scenes in the room. And the reason I love it is they get to do their own little thing that, that makes them feel good because it's theirs. And then they get to go back and use things other people have built. And for some reason, and I don't know if it's because they've built it together and they've sort of watched it come up before their eyes and they've gained appreciation for, oh, I couldn't have done this on my own. So maybe these people are pretty cool. I don't know if that's what it is or if it's simply the fact that you get to build a space and spend some time living in it and that fosters comfort. But for whatever of those reasons, I've found that exercise, even if I, and I usually do it in level three, and I've found that if they aren't starting to coalesce before that exercise, they'll be at the bar drinking together after that.
Huh.
There's just something about building a world together and living in it for a while that puts them at ease. Plus they know where everything is, so that all of that worry about space, object, and environment is taken out of the equation, and they can just live in this world together for a little while.
Hmm. That's interesting. I like it. I like it. I also appreciate the idea that you're like not trying to say like, okay, just be together. You're like, I honor the fact that you're, you know, you want your own contribution to this and you want to be able to see it and feel it and touch it. And so I'll give you something that you can tangibly understand is yours. And then hopefully that'll open up. I mean, that's such a human thing for us to, you know, sort of want something for ourselves first.
Yeah.
You know,
we do. We want to feel that we are competent and we have made a valuable contribution.
Yeah.
And I think we sort of underestimate that in life. It gets lost somewhere. It gets lost.
Well, you know, I feel like, wow, hold on. I almost went down a crazy, crazy rabbit hole. I'm going to hold back. I was like, she's got a show coming up. You can't do this to her. I was like, actually, I think, nope. Human nature is not what we're going to talk about. We're talking about performers. They're doing great. She's helping them out. Yes. Okay. One last thing before you go, before you head off to perform more exciting, wonderful shows, is are there ever times when, you know, you personally hit like a creative wall and you're like, I mean, it sounds like you got a lot of stuff going on. You ever get to the point where you're doing 500 things and you're like, yeah, I got this. And then all of a sudden one day it's just like, nothing's funny out of my mouth. How do you shake it off? How do you move forward? Or how do you just live in the muck for a little while?
All of the above.
You're too good to me.
I've gotten to the point where a show that's like a good show feels like a D, right? Because I have a pretty high standard. So if it's like an A minus a B, I feel like it's a D. And that's a little crazy, and I'll own that. And I'll let myself feel like meh for a little while. And then I'll remember it's improv, and then, and I will go on. And I will sometimes pull up podcasts from other people or things online of like dealing with that feeling of that I didn't do my best, or I'll reach out to people I trust. And then the rest of it is like, you know, you give yourself a little bit of time. I read one guy says, give yourself to the ride home and that's it. Then you're done. You can't belabor an awful show or a tough show or even just a mere show too long. And it's hard. It's really hard. And I think it's hard for everybody, even the most skilled improviser, to feel like, it wasn't my best. But it's humbling. It's humbling. A friend of mine is reading and listening to and taking in some work by a gentleman named Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R, I believe.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not misspeaking.
Nope, that's how you say his name. I know that guy.
he Chris shared, and I'm sure I'm paraphrasing Chris paraphrasing him, but something along the lines of he would ask for a good one good humiliation every day. And so I'm reminded of that when I feel like I have maybe my less than perfect moment, and I know I'll grow from it. I'm not saying I love it, but I'll grow from it. And I have, in addition to the amazing Dan Wilson, who's half of Binge Watch, I have the privilege of collaborating with a lot of other great people that help lift me up, like Jill Eichmann and Stephen J. Burnett. The three of us are in a trio called Irrational Fears. So we get to bring the things that make us crazy or the things that make other people crazy on stage and play with them. And in no way are we like making fun of therapy. We see a valuable place for that in the world. We're a self-help group is our little premise. So we're three hapless people desperately trying to handle some irrational fear. And it's fun to just like deal with vulnerability in front of an audience and be messy and be human. And we've gotten some great feedback on that show because I guess people like to see other people being human and less than perfect. It's good for us.
I think that's like all entertainment, isn't it? I
I
mean,
think it is.
I was watching this show on Netflix the other day, called Nurse Jackie, and Nurse Jackie's a drug addict. And spoiler alert, she never stops being a drug addict.
No, she does not.
You watch these shows the whole time going like, maybe she'll learn her lesson. No, she's not going to. That's why there's a show.
Yeah. It's like, when the scene, in an improv scene, it's like when you get what you want or you're thwarted, the scene's over. She's never going to stop, or there would not be a show.
I know. That's the other thing I tell my level one students. I go, you got to stop learning lessons. Your characters cannot be swayed. Even if he convinces you personally, nope. Doesn't matter.
Nope.
That guy is like, but don't walk through the fire. And you say, walking through the fire is the right thing. It's going to be way funnier for you to never see his point of view.
Exactly.
Like, you don't
Exactly.
have to learn a lesson as a comedy character. Comedy characters are dumb. Dumb dumbs.
I tell people play for the loss. It's fun.
Oh yeah. What's funny too is when I'm like first opening up where I'm like, and then this terrible thing happens and we love it. And they look at me horrified. And I was like, you can look at me horrified and not remember every comedy you've ever seen in your life. Or you can listen and I'm trying to teach you what to look for to make comedy. Like it's a
Yes.
terrible day in someone's life. That's what every comedy is.
Yeah, that's right. In someone else's life.
Yeah. Yeah, the audience is not having a terrible day. They're watching you, and that's why they think it's funny.
And it's cathartic for them because they're not the one going through it, but they can have empathy for you.
Or not. And that's the best part.
Yeah, they can
Because
be like,
you
oh,
don't
that guy
exist. That
never learned his
character's a
lesson.
fake thing. You don't have to
Yes.
feel bad.
No
It's
mistakes. Now I
fine.
want to come and take your class.
Oh, you're funny. We should all just,
Hardly.
I wish that I could do like a big go to every city and take all the classes from everywhere. Someday
That
that'll
would
be
be
my
something.
that'll be a new podcast. Like in 5 years, I'll move to a city. No, wait, I can't do that. I have a child. Okay, but
You have a child.
later. Okay, when I turn 60, it's gonna be great. So then I'm gonna go city to city, taking everybody's class. And reviewing it out loud in a podcast. God, that'd
Oh
be
my gosh,
horrifying.
that would be
Oh
fabulous.
my God. I've actually considered doing that with like doing one of the intensives. Like, one of, I say one of the intensives, I mean in the world. I don't know which one, but like I have a list of ones that I want to go do. And so I'm like, okay, one by one, I'll go to these and then I'll just review them on my website. So it's like, want to do a cool thing? I did a cool thing. And
That's
it
so
sounds fun. I mean,
fabulous.
I'm into it, but right now with the baby, the number one thing I get to do is I get to talk to people on the phone. And I get to talk to them about what they're doing and learn about all sorts of cool communities and places to go and make as close of friends as you can make on the phone with improvisers and performers all around the world. So right now it's
And thank
okay.
you for giving us a voice.
I'm glad. I'm glad people can hear your voice, especially because you've been so delightful, but also just because I had no idea there were so many amazing opportunities in San Francisco, and now both for those visiting and those who are like, man, I have to move to San Francisco. What am I going to do now? I can be like, dude, do you know how many things are going on?
There you go.
There you go.
Well, what a joy this has been to chat with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day and sharing your stories with me.
Well, thanks for listening.
That was a good one. I wish that I like had that as the outro all the time. Thanks for listening. I'm taking it.
Oh, feel free.
You're adorable.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.